Welcome to episode 1448 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. We are in the midst of a series on the life and times of the apostles, continuing this week with a focus on the apostle Peter. In our last episode, Peter stood on a mountain and witnessed the unveiled glory of Christ, hearing the Father's voice command, "This is my Son, listen to him." Today we move from the mountain of glory to an upper room in Jerusalem, where Jesus teaches a lesson just as profound. Acts of the Apostles, Part 1, Chapter 8.
There are things a teacher does that his students remember for the rest of their lives. Not the doctrines, not the formal instruction. The moments when what he does becomes the lesson, when the teaching and the teacher are the same thing. This was one of those moments, and I nearly missed what it meant entirely. It was the night of Passover. We had gathered in an upper room in the city, 12 of us and the rabbi, a borrowed space, the table prepared. We did not know, most of us, that this was the Last Supper. That word, last, would not attach itself to the memory until later, when everything that came after forced us to go back and look at the evening through different eyes. Jesus knew. That much was clear looking back. He knew exactly what the night was.
Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am.
He got up from the table. He took off his outer robe. He wrapped a towel around his waist the way a household servant would, the lowest household servant, the one whose station was below the work of washing feet, and he picked up a basin of water. And he began. He went around the table, one by one, kneeling, lifting each pair of feet, washing the road dust from between the toes, drying them with the towel at his waist. 12 disciples, 12 pairs of feet, moving around the table with the patience and care of someone who had thought this through and decided it was exactly what needed to happen. You have to understand what feet were like in our world. We walked everywhere, on dusty roads in the dry season and muddy roads in the wet. Most of us wore sandals that were little more than leather soles strapped to our feet. By the time a traveler arrived at a house, his feet were filthy. That is why foot washing was a common hospitality. But it was also servant's work, not the work of the master of the house, not the work of a respected teacher, and certainly not the work of someone his followers called Lord. If a household had servants, the lowest servant did it. That is what made that night in the upper room so unsettling. Jesus was not merely cleaning dust from our feet. He was taking the place of the servant and showing us that greatness in the kingdom of God would be measured not by how many people serve you, but by how willing you are to serve others. No one spoke. The silence in the room was the silence of men who do not know how to respond to something that violates every category they have been given. A rabbi does not wash feet. A teacher does not take the posture of a slave. A man who had stilled a storm and fed 5,000 with 5 loaves does not kneel in the dirt before fishermen. And yet, he worked his way around. And then he came to me. I looked at him kneeling in front of me, and everything in me refused. Not from indifference, not from pride of the ordinary kind, from something that felt in the moment like reverence, like the same instinct that had made me say, "Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man," when the nets filled with fish. The distance between what he was and what I was felt, in that moment, unbridgeable. And the idea of him closing that distance with a basin of water and my dirty feet felt like a violation of the natural order. Lord, are you going to wash my feet?
You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand.
No, you shall never wash my feet. Never, that word again, the same word I had used at Caesarea Philippi when he spoke of the cross. Never, Lord, this shall never happen to you. I had a habit, apparently, of telling God what was never going to happen. He looked at me steadily.
Unless I wash you, you have no part with me.
That stopped me. Not the logic of it. I did not follow the logic of it. Not then. But the weight of it. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me. The thing I was refusing was not a gesture of humility. It was connection. Belonging. The basin was not beneath him. It was the means by which I could remain with him. And so I did the other thing I always do. I overcorrected. Then, Lord, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well.
Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you.
He finished. He put his robe back on. He returned to his place at the table. And then he explained what we had just witnessed.
Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. No servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him.
I want to be honest with you about what I understood in that moment. I understood the surface of it. Wash one another's feet. Serve one another, do not consider yourself above the work I have just done. I understood that much. What I did not yet understand was what the basin was pointing toward. That the foot washing was a sign, a preview of something hours away, when he would not merely kneel in the dirt with a towel, but would kneel into death itself on behalf of people who did not deserve it. The logic of the basin was the logic of the cross. The servant who stoops to the lowest task is the same Lord who would, before the night was over, be handed to his enemies. I did not see that then. I was still too occupied with my own response to the basin. But the image stayed with me. It has never left me. In every city I have entered, in every community I have tried to build, in every moment when the temptation has been to lead from above rather than from beside, I go back to the upper room, to the kneeling, to the water and the towel. To the Lord of glory with dust from my feet on his hands. That is what authority looks like when it is completely free, when it has nothing to prove and no position to protect. It kneels. Later that same evening, he broke bread and poured wine and told us these were his body and his blood. He told us one of us would betray him. He spoke of going somewhere we could not follow yet. And I, full of the feelings that the basin and the meal had stirred in me, made a promise. The kind of promise that feels absolutely true when you make it, and absolutely true only until the moment it is tested. Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. I meant it. I want you to know that. I meant every word of it, with everything I had. He looked at me the way he sometimes did, with that particular quality of knowing that was never cruel and never comfortable.
Will you really lay down your life for me? Truly I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times.
I did not believe him. I could not imagine it. The man who had walked on water, who had said, because you say so, in a boat full of empty nets, who had watched the mountain blaze with glory, that man would not deny knowing Jesus of Nazareth in a courtyard before morning. Or so I told myself, walking down the stairs of the upper room into the Jerusalem night.
Many of us are comfortable serving others until we are placed in the position of needing to be served ourselves. Peter's struggle was not merely with humility, it was with grace. He could imagine giving something to Jesus, sacrificing for Jesus, even dying for Jesus. What he struggled to accept was that Jesus had come first to serve him, cleanse him, and save him. The gospel begins not with what we do for Christ, but with what Christ has done for us. Before we can take up the towel and serve others, we must first allow ourselves to be washed by the one who kneels before us in love. True Christian leadership, like true Christian discipleship, begins at the basin. To be continued.